There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus. Venus.
Why not? We bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Riesman-Ellen. I'm your host. On today's program, the value of retro and vintage technology, especially in these trying economic times. My guest today is Bohush Blahut. He is an editor with the blog and website RetroThing.com. And we'll be talking about all the ways in which things you might have thrown away in the back of your closet are still fun and useful. You do want to stay tuned. So before I get into the interview here, I have to come in and give a little bit of a mea culpa. It appears the first couple minutes of the program this week were the victim of static electricity. Normally, when I'm doing the live program at WNUR, I have a couple recordings going on, and in fact, the second one did work, and is the reason why I have a show to present to you at all, although the recording got started a couple minutes late due to the fact that we were coming in after a late-running women's basketball game broadcast, meaning it was difficult for Andrew, the engineer and producer, to get in there and get the recording started. And I usually also record the program on a portable audio recorder, a Zoom H2. And that has worked for me faithfully since I started using it about a year ago. But it was a very dry day. And when I walked over to hit stop on the recorder, there was a zap and a little spark I saw of static electricity. And the recorder rebooted itself at the end of the show. And as a result, it appears to have lost that recording. And although I did not try to send off the memory card to some great data recovery company, all my efforts to try and get the full show off of the SD card in there failed. So we have most of the show, but I missed the first couple of minutes. So we're going to come in progress. I've already introduced Bohush, and he's talked very briefly about his website, RetroThing.com, which is really an exploration of gadgets and technology that one might call retro, things they discover, interesting things that might be back in a closet they find in a thrift store, other people bring to their attention that are novel, maybe to our modern eyes, and have uses maybe people never thought of, or they're just plain fun. And we already got off on a tangent just in the first couple of minutes talking about that old video game legend, Atari. So we'll pick it up there. For people who may be a little younger, though I think everyone's heard of Atari, you know, the real big home video game where you could buy cartridges and change games.
Interchangeable cartridges and stuff. And that was huge. And Atari had crazy long longevity, not because of just the nostalgia aspect, but because the way it was built, most of the hard work is done by the program on the cartridge. So like as years went on, guys discovered all these tricks you could do, and it plays tricks with like the video signal on your TV. The people who did Atari are very, very clever. And today, you know, the way a video game system works, the games that come out for a video game system, it's kind of predetermined by how the system is designed. So I kind of miss that freewheeling, you know, kind of not knowing what the end result is going to be 5 years from now.
Well, there had to be creativity, because you're talking about the amount of memory that's in a digital watch.
Yeah, a watch might actually dwarf what was in
days,
an Atari.
These days, especially,
yeah.
Right? You know, it's something along the lines of, I'm not even sure it was 4K of memory.
That's what's weird, is like the memory wasn't really in the system, it was
in
the
cartridge.
So some games had like 8K. Well, but actually some guys, this is part of the attraction of Atari, is that guys today have figured out how to expand on
it.
And so there are like 64K games now, which is completely insane.
Well, I had an add-on to Atari when I was in middle school. That was called Supercharger.
The Supercharger that would let you load games off cassette, right?
So and so you could have multiple parts. It was as if you sort of had like five or six cartridges, but it kept your game alive. So you'd go from one level and play it out, and then you'd load in from the cassette another level, because it was essentially more memory, really cheap way of having more memory.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the things like, well, the fact that it still inspires creativity today, I think, is just awesome. You know, if you go to, like, there's a site called, there's AtariAge.com, and there are guys who are creating games today for the Atari, and they're still compelling, they're still a lot of fun, and they're very modern, they're very hip, which is an odd thing to say. Every year they do a Christmas cartridge, and the games are more and more elaborate, they're still discovering stuff, and I guess that's kind of what we're about at Retro Thing, is the discovery. Because, like, There's this danger, and you'll see this if you look at a lot of kind of nostalgia websites, that that they treat older things as these precious, I don't know, they're just like way too precious
like
about it. Yeah, and it's like, no, you know what? If you have a record, you should play it. Mm-hmm. It's not doing anybody any good sitting there in its plastic. Mm-hmm. I beg your pardon. But get some use out of it. I mean, that, you know, we're talking about this this new kind of crummy economy, and I think in the pages of Retro Thing, we're telling people, like, hey, you know what? You might have fun stuff in your house. You might not have to buy something new to have a good time. Maybe you can just go to your grandma's and see if she's got some old records tucked away or some old 8mm home movies. Not that we're sanctioning people to have this fun, but we're just making them aware of stuff that they haven't.
We're going to make you have fun.
Well, maybe they've forgotten. Mm-hmm. One of the most gratifying things we've done is when we write about something, like I'm thinking of a specific thing, like we wrote about this board game once. Not a popular board game, it was called Tugboat. And as you can imagine, the thrill and majesty of pretending you're a tugboat. But like, we got a couple emails from people saying, like, oh, I totally remember this, I had this. And a couple people said, you know what, I went on eBay, I bought it for $10, and we have a new thing we do in my family every Sunday night after dinner. Mm-hmm. That's the best. You know, that's kind of what it's all about.
It's a heck of a lot cheaper than a Wii.
Yes. Yes, very much so. Very much so. And it's not as bad when you ignore it, like the Wii Fit. You know, you spend all that money on that balance board, and you say you're going to get exercise out of it. You know, if you kind of throw a $5 board game in the closet, who cares?
So you get a lot of feedback then.
We do. And it's good feedback, which is really interesting, because when
not get a life, guys.
You know, we have a really good readership, and we're smug about it. It's interesting. Like, sometimes when, you know how the blog world works, is that we write something and then somebody else might borrow a little piece of it, and I'll notice that they get, you know, maybe more comments than we did, but they get more because it's lots of people saying, me too, that sucks, black and white TV, you know, like those comments don't have any value. But on our site, the people who take the time to write actually have some memory to share, or they're talking about, you know, like maybe somebody younger saying, wow, I had no idea, I want to play with a reel-to-reel tape recorder. Mm-hmm. And that's happened. Actually, I wrote about like a Wallensack tape recorder. I remembered them from high school because they used them in our language classes.
Right.
And they were these analog bulletproof tape recorders I found at the thrift for like $5. And one young guy who had his own like digital recording studio, he thought it was neat. He emailed me a few weeks later saying he'd bought one on eBay and that everybody runs their music through it before they go to his digital stuff.
To get the nice analog sound. Maybe might have a tube in it even.
It actually is a tube thing. But like, he never would have thought about that. Mm-hmm. You know, like, and he had said he'd read audiophile stuff about like kind of snooty tube, blah, blah. But it was never interesting to him. Mm-hmm. But me kind of like saying, hey, you know, this is actually kind of accessible and maybe you could have fun and try it. You know, there wasn't a lot of emotional baggage with it. That made him go out and do it. And the rewards were there for him.
So how do you go from being an enthusiast, a collector, to then deciding to take that step and wanting to write about, to share it there in a blog format?
Well, I was recruited, I guess you could say. I don't remember how exactly I found Retro Thing.
It's the Retro Agenda, I've heard about.
Yeah, it's the Retro Agenda, yes. You know, and it's funny you say that, because a couple times when we've been fortunate enough to be interviewed on the radio, I think my name so stymies people that they get that right, but then they mess up Retro Thing. And my favorite is somebody called it Retrothing. And it took him a little while to figure out, no, those are other words, right? But anyway, Retro Thing had existed for about 6 months, and somehow I found it, you know, the way that you find things on the internet. And in the comments section, I blathered on about something. And then another post came out, and I blathered on about something again. And James, the guy who started the site, he said, okay, smart guy, let's see you do one. And so I did one, and I think my first one was about, it was a video game thing. It was about this cheap import CD player that also played pirate Nintendo games. And it was this big spaghetti monster. And and that had a real positive response. And then James said, okay, let's do this. And it's been the two of us since then.
Okay. So you're right. You just fall in. And because it's not the same sort of even top-down that a newsletter can be in a lot of ways.
Right,
it's very easy to get recruited on.
And the beauty part, too, is that I don't consider myself a collector of anything. Like, I don't treat these things as these precious, you know, I would never take a comic book and put it in a plastic bag. Respect to the guys who put comic books in plastic bags. I'm not into it. And I don't have any, like, organized one thing I like. And so Retro Thing's approach of sort of being about everything, about being about gadget history, totally appealed to me because my knowledge base is this arcane, all over the place deal.
So you're a user. I mean, this is not museum stuff.
Right.
This is not something which we look back in the past. This is something where you're thinking, well, how do I use this? What use is this thing to me?
I mean, I understand wanting to preserve a few examples of something, but some people take it too far. And it seems like it gets in the way of the fun.
Mm-hmm.
This summer, James and I were lucky enough to be invited by Ford to go to Richmond, Indiana for an anniversary event of the Model T. And so we went over there, and they were bringing together the largest group of Model Ts ever for the Guinness Book of World Records. And the thing that I hadn't thought about this, but people were driving them in. And I thought they'd all come on like panel trucks and be packed in styrofoam. And pretty much everybody we met said, no, this is my fun car. And I drive it. I know how to fix it. It gets, 40 miles to the gallon or something like that. Of course, it's because it doesn't have any anti-pollution stuff built in. But no, these guys were all about keeping them running and bombing around in them and stuff like that. And it was tremendous fun.
Isn't that an element of it? I mean, is that a lot of older technology, a lot of older gadgets, they're repairable.
Yeah.
You can get inside. Yeah. You have discrete components, and you think about it, instead of just a circuit board, you'll see actual transistors, resistors, et cetera. There's the ability to keep it alive. And certainly, having worked in audio and video production over the years, you would have a VCR, a particular type of deck that you would seek out even.
Sure.
Because you knew we could fix it.
Yeah.
That's one
exactly.
We can still get parts and we can fix it so that, come the apocalypse, we can still play those old U-matic tapes.
Well, and there were at this Model T thing, there were guys who were like 19 and 20 years old, and they were into the Model T. And it turns out it's not impossible to buy a Model T. It's not like a hugely expensive hobby.
Well, they
to
made
get into.
How many millions?
Exactly. There were a lot of them. They're fun to keep going. Somebody was, I can't remember, Napa was sponsoring like a gasoline alley, like a garage to come in, and the guys would kind of hang out and swap parts and things like that. And it was very encouraging because when I think about it, everybody I know who's like who's deeply into technology, who knows how to fix stuff, they started because they were a kid with a screwdriver and they opened up to look inside things. But like if you open up an iPod and look inside, I don't know what you learn off of that.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, maybe it's possible. I just can't imagine.
Well, there are people who do work on that, but it's certainly a different set of skills. It's certainly, there are folks who jailbreak iPhones, right? Who take iPhones and liberate them from AT&T.
Certainly.
But it's programming for all intents and purposes. It's very digital. It requires interfacing, I'm not putting it down by any measure.
Certainly. No, I admire those guys.
But at the same time, it's not particularly physical or visceral.
Right. Like you can't just, let's stick with the iPod thing. You couldn't just have that and look at it and figure it out.
Right.
You have to have computer information, data sheets. Sure, you can get that off the internet. But like a Model T, there's a chance in hell that you could just open it up and look at it and figure out what's wrong.
Or even a VHS VCR.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
To
you
the
pick out the
components.
Part that's on fire.
Yeah, exactly. You find that where the tape is all, you know, and probably folks who are you know, even in their 20s have done that with a cassette tape at some point in their life where they've you know, unspaghetted it. Maybe they've even spliced it back together and rescued a very favorite cassette tape.
Now, that said, I don't miss back when I worked in film production and it was all about MIDI time code and having multiple appliances have this like very tentative connection to each other and everything had to move together like a big fragile clock, and then you could like mix a soundtrack or do something on the visuals, and if the smallest thing went wrong you had to do it all again. I mean, it's that should be in a museum just to show people what it was like when it was hard, but I'd really rather just stick to what we've got on the computer.
So you're happy to use an Avid or Final Cut Pro is what
you're telling me. Well, because that's a case where that old way doesn't have a real benefit anymore. It's more of a curiosity, a historic footnote. Like, there's one video system, and I wish I could remember it. It bugs me because I think I have a pretty good memory, and when something drops out of it, I get crazy. But there was a video system in the early 90s for editors that actually used 24 VCRs, and it was so that you could actually preview stuff. You'd actually copy your movie, your raw footage 24 times, and then it could show you edits one after the other off the 24 decks, and then you could say, okay, commit, and then it would do it. But like, can you imagine that thing operating, or just the heat that would come off of it? So I want one of those in a museum somewhere,
right? Because that's a point at which digital video was in its infancy, just being developed,
right?
And you know, it turns out that the tool ends up being pretty cool and ends up replacing processes which were laborious, error prone, you know, in the old tape, you know, days. I'm sure you did linear editing back to back,
miles and miles.
And it was very easy to make a mistake, and you just have to do it over. You just record right over the tape you just did. And if you made a bad edit three edits ago, you know, it's kind of like making a mixtape that way. Right. You got to rewind and you got to re-record over it.
That said, knowing analog stuff and knowing old technology is excellent for problem solving. Mm-hmm. Lots of times when I'm on a film shoot, if I'm with a bunch of people younger than me who only understand digital, if something goes wrong, there's nothing to do. And these guys like don't have the tools to fix it. Whereas I'm like, no, if you just patch the video out through this, you can use it as its own sync source. And it's like very hot wiring and things like that. But it gets the job done. And so I have a feeling of dismay over that like, you know, in 10 years that knowledge has been lost. So if RetroThink can help preserve those little nuggets of information, at least in a small way, maybe we'll help somebody somewhere down the road.
And you are listening to the Media Geek Radio Show. My name is Paul Risonel, and I'm your host. And today, we're talking about RetroThing.com, retro and vintage gadgets and devices and technologies. My guest is Bohush Blahut. He is one of the bloggers, one of two. Who's your co-blogger?
James Graham in Canada.
Okay. So cross-border relationship.
Multinational,
here.
Just like your show.
Do you argue about spelling?
No. Actually, James is really sensible, despite being a vegetarian. You know, I'm from Chicago. I have an all-sausage diet, and we have never argued about food or anything like that.
Or how you spell color.
No. But you know what? I have purposely stopped using the word America to refer to the United States.
Uh-huh.
So, and that makes sense.
But I don't. Media Geek is not heard in his province. The closest we get is Manitoba. Manitoba is the closest we get with the Media Geek Radio Show, which you can check out online at radio.mediageek.net.
Smooth.
And of course, if you got any comments, send it to me, paul@mediageek.net. I'm actually online right now. If someone wanted to email anything, or if you want to send anything by Twitter. Twitter.com/mediageek.
I still haven't worked out what Twitter is.
140 characters or less is what it is.
I vaguely understand it, and then I don't.
Once you're on, it's like crack, my friend. It's absolutely
I guess.
Like crack.
I mean, the thing is, when you write a site like Retro Thing, it's very difficult to keep dodging the accusation that you're a codger. And I'm not really that old, but me not understanding things like or not caring about MySpace, that instantly ostracized me from other friends.
Well, like MySpace, I just have a thing against Rupert Murdoch, and I'm not giving away. That's my bias.
My slander is against bad design, and just it's been an engine to have. Really crappy looking web pages.
Some of the worst ever. It almost makes some parts of old GeoCities look absolutely well designed.
You know, we've actually gotten. I mean, this is really fortunate because I don't really know that much about like web HTML type stuff, and so it's fortunate that RetroThing is this very simple, you know, white page. And we try to treat it like a magazine. We use blog technology, you know, to let people know, but it's not your typical blog, like, you know, just basically copy and pasting. You know, I don't think the control C key combination is a good way to write a blog, which a lot of people seem to think. You know, we write all original content. We do try to sort of lay it out like a magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good because I wouldn't know how to do anything fancy. You know, I don't know how to do rollover Java hoo-ha. And it doesn't matter. You know, we like to think that you could also just take Retro Thing and just move it to print, which would be so cool. But today you don't have to do that.
It would be very much more expensive.
It would be a lot more a lot more than free.
A lot more than free for you, and not to mention for your readers.
Indeed, yeah.
The investment would be pretty paramount. Well, so there's an element here, you know, with you know, looking at these retro technologies. It's fun, but there's a utility, there's usability, and it's a little political, right? I mean, you mentioned, you mentioned how, in this sort of budget climate, and I'm not saying political necessarily left or right.
I'm glad you're clarifying that.
Yeah, I mean, not necessarily left or right, but there's a certain, it's an independent notion.
Well, you know what? Anybody can write a website that says, hey, here's this Pioneer stereo, it's worth $40. Mm-hmm. Who cares? You know, there's a lot of places to go for that. But writing about where these things fit in our lives without at the same time fetishizing it, just saying like, hey, you know what? I like my life with a record player in it. And you can too for about $20. That seems kind of nice to me. You know,
well, and that's the other half is the fetish side. I was going to ask you because, I think what we've seen in the last 10 years in popular culture has been a sort of retro fetishism.
Mm-hmm.
So you have, folks who are, and I'm not doing
this. You could also call that the failure of imagination.
you could call that too. But, you know, I mean, of course, I'm watching 80s fashion come back in Wicker Park. Mm-hmm. You see folks who are really into, some folks have gotten into film cameras again. I've been into film cameras.
Yeah.
You have elements and it seems that at one level there is a fetish, a popular fetish amongst for some people that comes out because some new old technology comes back and is cool, whether it's 80s synths or whether it's film cameras or something like that. Retro Thing doesn't seem to jump too much in that bandwagon to me as a reader. Where do you stand with that? Or what do you think about that sort of retro fetishism?
You know, let your freak flag fly. That's what we say. Well, you know, it's the thing. We could get caught up in those kinds of fads, but...
Or the arguments.
But then that dates us, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
All those darn hipsters with their 80s hair and their Casio synthesizers.
If you're happy, then go for it. You know, have fun. You know, this is going to sound really odd. One of the cool things in, like, a movie like Buckaroo Banzai is how, like, all the characters dress like they want just because they want to. Like, the one guy's a cowboy, you know, and the other guys are all very kind of 80s looking. He's like, I like cowboys. That would be a cool world to live in. So if you could have, you know, your best friend still listens to music on tape and your other friend doesn't trust anything but the shortwave, that's all right. And that's kind of interesting. You know, when everybody is just sort of choosing from the same little pool of what's at Hot Topic, then, you know, you run into these kind of hard limits about how original you can be. So, I mean, I guess overall Retro Thing is just saying, like, you know what, it's okay to like what you like. You know, nobody should tell you whether you should or shouldn't like it.
So it's very individualistic.
Yeah.
At that level.
I mean, you don't need to be a jerk about it. But, one of the things that confused me as a kid when I was growing up, and I first started listening to pop music, because I grew up in a very odd household, and I didn't listen to popular radio maybe until I was in high school. I didn't understand the idea that the pop chart was constantly being turned over. I thought that there was just this growing pool of great music, and that if you were to turn on Z95, ho-ho, you'd hear like a song from 5 years ago, 10 years ago, and that it was just this, hey, look, it's the history of music, and this is great. I had no idea it was the same 10 songs over and over. So it's really unfortunate when a lot of good ideas just get swept under the rug and nobody's there to champion those things. And, you know, the biggies like Atari and 8-Tracks probably don't need a lot of help. But there are other things we like to remind people of. Like one of the things we think about a lot is, you know what, it should never become, the idea of hanging out with your family and playing a board game should never become retro.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every kid has a computer in their room, and everybody, when they come home, they just scatter to all corners of the house, and they might interact more online with each other than in person. And we're saying, like, you know what, it's not a bad idea to play cards. You know, like my girlfriend and I have been very into Boggle lately, and not to make not because there's a big political statement about Boggle.
No.
But because it's fun.
Exactly.
Although I'm convinced that people who must be really good at Boggle, they've got to be deaf because that thing is really loud when you rattle it around.
Well, I mean, and that is part of it, right? I mean, there's an individualistic streak, and there's an element of simply having fun, mm-hmm. you know, and finding something to have fun with. To some extent, without regard about what someone else might think or how someone else might judge you as the crazy guy with the reel-to-reel tape recorders or something like that. And indeed, like, you know, 8-tracks, we sort of mentioned a couple times, and you sort of said that doesn't need a lot of help. But in a lot of ways, I mean, 8-tracks were really kind of considered laughable technology, except that the 8-track folks united.
Right. I was going to say the reason it doesn't need help is because there was kind of that movement in the 90s, and it was...
With zines.
Russ Forster, he wrote 8-Track Mind, and they turned it into... It was really not about 8-tracks. It was this anti-marketing movement saying, like, you know what? We just want to listen to this stuff that's 10 cents a piece. We don't care that it's broken down. We don't care that it's difficult. This is what we want. And if you read some of those zines, there are very, like, political ideas in there. And the documentary is unreasonably good. It's called So Wrong They're Right.
Yes, I have it.
Great documentary.
And it is available on DVD now.
I've been looking for it for years. I mean, I know Russ, and, you know, I didn't know. Okay. I have to come here to find out. Russell.
I had Russ on the show many years ago.
Sweet guy. Really sweet guy.
And I actually, I've lost touch with him. Are you still in touch?
I'm going to try.
I was actually actively looking around for him a couple of months ago, looking around the internet to see if I could
find
him.
I know people.
The old email address I had was no longer any good.
But yeah, I guess every once in a while it does take that kind of champion. Mm-hmm. And today with the web, you can find all those kind of enthusiast websites. So if you want to like play with Transformers again, there are a lot of places to go to talk with people who like Transformers. I met a guy 2 weeks ago. I was in D.C. I was doing I was doing some video work for the Guinness Book of World Records. There was a retro gaming event that they wanted streamed on the net. So I met this sound guy who is so into G.I. Joe. It was an illness. And I can't remember his name, but he had, as soon as he could, when he hit 18, he changed his name legally to a G.I. Joe character. I mean, not Snake Eyes or Destro, but like something like Zamfir or something like that. I mean, sweet guy.
Uh-huh.
And the thing is, he was one of those dudes that like if you mentioned G.I. Joe, that was a hazard because he could find a way to make anything segue to G.I. Joe. Some of us do that with Doctor Who, less said the better. But
thanks for warning me.
Yeah. You know, he's got a lot of friends that internationally that are just these G.I. Joe freaks.
Mm-hmm.
Good for them. Rock on.
Yeah, I've noticed there's some kid on YouTube who's a tape recorder fiend.
Oh, yeah.
And he posts reviews.
Is it Cassette Master?
Cassette Master,
yes. And I've emailed with him.
He posts reviews of every cassette recorder he can find.
Yeah,
and he knows the arcane details of cassette recorders from the 70s and the 80s.
And I love how unaffected those videos are.
And he just records. Yeah, apparently
because
he just records
on his
computer.
You know, I took a class once in ethnographic film, and they talked about, like, it's important. Set up your camera on the hut. Don't talk to the tribe. Just observe them in their natural habitat. And that's what he's doing with, like, a Craig, you know,
right.
1960s tape cassette recorder, because it's all you see. It's just there, and he just sort of gives you his narration. And look, it plays cassettes. On RetroThing.com, when you look at it, it covers a lot of stuff. And we're lucky enough that we have a wide age range that reads us as well. Like we have the adults or older folks that remember this tech the first time through. We have kids who are discovering it for the first time. So there's a little something for everybody. And we do get yelled at because like we're this time sink because the archives are just huge.
Yes.
Right? And we've said this before that like our archives almost have more value because they get older. You know, other blogs, their archives just, who cares? Who cares about a cell phone that came out 2 months ago? But, you know, we just have these articles.
You're talking about persistent stuff.
Yeah. Well, it just gets more vintage. So I hope that your listeners get a chance to check out RetroThing.com and they can email us with requests for stuff to cover or just become part of the fun. It would be awesome.
Well, Bohush, thanks.
Thank you. Thank you very much for inviting me over. I appreciate it a lot. Hope to see you soon.
And that's another edition of Media Geek. I'll be back in one more week with more news and views of our media environment. And in the meantime, check out Media Geek Online. How geeky is it? at MediaGeek.net. It's home to the Media Geek blog. You also have links to a retro thing there. And the radio shows at radio.mediageek.net, where you can get it by podcast. You can listen in the browser. You can download the MP3, whether you missed it or you want to catch it again. If you have any comments about the program, please send them to me, paul@mediageek.net. And follow along on Twitter. Everybody's Twittering. Twitter.com/mediageek. And comments, paul@mediageek.net. Thanks for tuning in.